Welcome back to another episode of Calcio Unplugged. The Serie A season is over as AC Milan take their rightful place on the throne. Danielle, you were in a kind of a situation where you know, even if you won the game, it may not have been enough. You needed a little luck on your side. Unfortunately, Olivier Giroud and Raphael Leao had other ideas. Milan crown champions. Just your reaction to them winning, and then we can get into it.
Well, first and foremost, I will be nice enough today and actually congratulate them on winning their 19th Scudetto. And now that means we are tied on Scudetto win. So it's in the end, they deserved it. They fought. And even when they had matches where it looked like they wouldn't have won it, they dug within themselves and got the job done and were able to get the results. Whereas Inter, we had some crucial matches that we should have won, but just critical mistakes in the end cost us. So they rightfully deserve this Scudetto. So congratulations, AC Milan, on winning your Scudetto.
I remember what Zlatan said when he joined. By the time I leave, AC Milan will have won a trophy. I mean, call him what you want, a visionary from the future. I mean, the way he's been playing in the late years of his career, I think that's, you know, such a incredible part of it as well. As much as this is maybe not what the result you would wanted, and we can get into what exactly happened and how this happened and all that stuff. But I think, and I want your take on this as well, I think this is good for the league because obviously Inter have the squad that can go a couple in a row, that have the players, that have the materials to do it. AC Milan have a good team, and we knew this last year coming into the season. But there were a few question marks surrounding AC Milan, and you could argue some of that still exists, but a lot of it has kind of gone to the wayside. But for the league itself, I think this is great because the interest will peak a little more than it has the last couple of years. Incredible title race, incredible relegation scrap, incredible Europa League race, as crazy as that sounds. It seems like all panels of top to bottom were amazing. We didn't quite get the dramatics of sort of what we saw at the top of the Premier League last week. But we had Milan in Sampdoria. Tough place. You guys are at home, right?
Yes, we played
Sampdoria.
Sampdoria, and then the other guys played Sassuolo.
Yeah. So you are in Milan. You give it to Sampdoria, who had taken a point off you earlier this season. Carrera comes up to the plate with two great goals in that game. You do everything you possibly can, but then Milan takes care of their own business. But considering the league and where it's heading, I think this is good for the league now that we have it, because just the narrative about a lot of things, but like, Inter win it, then AC Milan win it, and then I think it's going to be you two next year fighting for it again at the very minimum. Napoli probably won't, but it was great to see Napoli do so well throughout the season until the very end, until Roma and Empoli kicked them out of the race. But they were right there with the end, and start to finish the season, it was a three-team race. It ended up being a two-team race in the end. But I think, you know, in terms of the league and its marketability and getting more interest from the neutral viewer, I think this is great because now we have an AC Milan team that just won the league. We have an Inter team that have the best roster that are probably going to react and put some stuff together in the transfer window to make it more interesting next year. This season will probably be hard to top. But it's just on the point of sort of for the league, how important do you think this type of season was for the whole of Italian football?
I think regardless of if Inter or AC Milan won it, it still would have been good for the league, even if Inter won it, because we all remember the 9-season run of Juventus where it was just them year after year, and it kind of lost interest after a while. But then you have Inter and now AC Milan coming along and winning a Scudetto. It kind of, like, I actually 100% agree with you. It kind of, if you're like a neutral viewer who would never really tune into Serie A because, oh, it's boring, or the quote unquote Farmers League or whatever the heck they want to use and stuff that comes out of their mouths or on their through their thumbs. Yeah, this definitely brings a more interesting aspect to the league, which hasn't been seen in several seasons. So it kind of gives a neutral viewer something to finally say, hey, people are wanting to go over to Serie A. Let's go see what it's about. And then on top of that, you also mentioned a couple other areas. We had a great relegation battle with Salernitana fighting until the end to escape relegation. Then you also had a tightly contested race for the remaining champions in Europa League spots. So overall, I think this will eventually boost viewership going forward and kind of like say, hey, we're here to like show you that we're not like a two-team race. But there could be times where if through a majority of the season, you could have maybe three, depending on how things go, sometimes even four teams in the race until like usually the end of the season where some of the other certain teams get gassed out. And then it ends up being just two teams in the end. But yeah, overall, this is definitely a great look for the league, and hopefully this boosts viewership going forward.
Yeah, agreed. And I just want to clarify what I meant by Milan winning is better for the league. And this is the only reason I see it. A neutral viewer, someone who's not watching it all the time, it's obviously had watched the Juventus stuff, and obviously the Inter winning it last year brought interest back because it's a new team winning it. But if Inter, and again, I'm sure that I'm not saying the league would have been damaged, but if Inter had won back to back, a lot of fans from other leagues will probably think, here we go again. So the fact, we just need enough data here to prove over a couple year stretch that it's not reverting back to a one team dominating the league, where we have in the last 3 years, we have three different champions. So if you win it next year, the people who have seen this league the last couple of years are starting to have more interest in it. But you know, winning next year wouldn't have the same type of negative impact that might would have, because some people who didn't maybe pay close attention would have said, oh great, here we go again with another team that's going to win a whole bunch of titles in a row. And you know, but I think overall everything was kind of at the apex of it. And you know, it's very rare for a league to have four teams fighting for the title. So I think that's a little unrealistic. Three is good. This year, for the most part, we had three. England had two. I mean, basically, Spain had one. They just handed Real Madrid the trophy at the beginning of the season, it felt like. And then, obviously, France had one. And a lot of these leagues were competitive as well. But if we can maintain having two teams fighting for the title until the very end of the season, I think that's going to be – that's only going to do great things for the league. And, obviously, to adjust here a little bit, you know, I have English friends who've been messaging me about the league. I have friends just based on the Salernitana stuff messaging me and paying attention to it, watching those games at the bottom of the table, just to see what the conclusion of this great thing is. And again, when we talk about them being potentially one of the greatest escapes ever, some of the English fans are going to bring up Leicester City and Newcastle and stuff. But at the same time, I think the interest from top to bottom has been great. The Europa League race was good. The Champions League race was good for about half the season. Then it was basically all taken care of thanks to Atalanta falling off a cliff. But all things considered, incredible stuff. And obviously, if you don't know, the top four was AC Milan, Inter, Napoli and Juventus. And obviously, out of the top four, there wasn't too much close distance between the rest, at least at the end of the season. All right, so let's go to the bottom of the table. We've been very intrigued on Salentina and their ability to survive. Considering the drama that took place, and this was the beautiful thing about the bottom, is it was not in their control. I was very wary about their trip to Udinese, and I was rightfully worried about their trip to Udinese because they got absolutely pummeled by a Udinese team that was more up for it than I expected. Then we had to go to the bottom of the table where Cagliari and Venezia, who had already been relegated, were fighting a true battle. Cagliari fighting for survival, Venezia playing for pride. And it was a very tough game, and Venezia just had a burst of energy to hold off in a tough circumstance in Sardinia, which is tough. And holding them to a goalless draw keeps Salentina in the league, while again, Cagliari we had said goodbye to. So what are your thoughts on all the drama that took place at the bottom?
Okay, for all of us Big Bang Theory fans, I'm going to bust a penny. Holy crap on a cracker. That was one of it was just like Inter versus AC Milan, Inter and AC Milan at the top of the table. It was like, okay, two matches. What's going to happen? One of these teams is going to survive. The other team is going to go down regardless. And I do agree that this was one of the greatest escapes in football history, because Salernitana was, I mean, for a really good chunk of the season, we're in 20th at the bottom of the table.
Hold on, I just want to bring up a stat so you're aware. So going into the game against Roma, and I think we all recognize they lost that game, but that's when the flip switched, and they end up going on this great run, and they do what they do, and surviving. But going into that game, they had, I think it was 13 games in a row without a point. And then they had to go on this big run to obviously survive. But continue. I just want to throw that set in there.
But, yeah, I mean, like I said, for a good chunk of the season, they were at the bottom of the table. But then they got this, like, burst of energy and they went on this strong run where they were slowly working their way up. And in the end, obviously they lost their match, but due to Venezia playing for pride, stealing a point off of Cagliari, saw them stay up. So, I mean, just really, it was a fight for them to the end at that point too. I mean, for me, I love things like this where it came the relegation battle and also the title was left to the very last day, because anything could happen on that day. So overall, I am just very happy with how the season turned out.
Right. But on match day 38, again, Sassuolo just didn't show up and got pounded. You guys took care of Sampdoria without difficulty. But if you just look at the top, overall the season and the title race has been amazing. But the last day of the season with those two teams, there was no real sense of maybe AC Milan doesn't win the league. Because by the time it was half hour, they already had kind of secured themselves in that position. Where the bottom, we had to wait, you know, until the last possible moment to figure out what would happen. Salentina tried against Udinese and they just got spanked. That's going to happen sometimes. So their whole season was riding on whether or not Venezia could hold Cagliari, you know, to a certain standard, especially at the end of the season. And, you know, that game was like the whole thing was in riding in the balance. And I was watching that game with one eye open because I was scared. Because if you look at personnel, Cagliari with João Pedro, Leonardo Pavolatti, Razo and Mar, they got the quality in that team. Nandez, who I forgot still played for them, and I still don't understand how he's still there. But you look at all they have, and they were pushing, they were aggressive, and Venezia just held on for good life, for dear life. And I think a big part was just trying to hold off the madness of Cagliari. Again, it sucks because in all these relegation battles, there's a loser. There's three losers essentially, and two of those having to be Genoa and Cagliari. For an old school Serie A fan, and someone even in the recent future, they've been a part of this establishment of Italian football for a very long time. And even though I wanted Salernitana to survive, it's hard done by the performances of those two teams at the end of this season. And unfortunately, like I said, they have to go goodbye. And I think we'll see them very soon. I think if they keep even half of their squad together, that those two teams will go up and survive. And get promoted next season. But it's gonna be a weird and sad world without them next season.
Man, for the one last time, guys, the match that's really solidified it all for Genoa was the lunch meat derby against Bologna. So that is the last time I will be saying that for quite some time.
Hey, maybe you'll win the title next year then. All right. Now, obviously, mid-table, there's a lot of things up for grabs. Obviously, Roma did kind of mess it up the last few weeks to finish in the top five. They needed Verona, Lazio. They need Verona to do their thing. They did do their thing. No Immobile. Verona did everything they could. They were 2-1 up, and then they went down, and then they got a late equalizer. So keeping Roma behind Lazio for the last time. But obviously, if Roma go win a trophy, then finishing above Roma will be irrelevant. But, you know, that was a tense game that could have said some things. But really, the thing we're looking at, because Roma took care of business against Torino, did their thing, got their points. Tammy Abraham with two, Lorenzo Pellegrini with one. And they solidify Europa League top six. We knew this on Friday. So everything was riding on. Two matches in particular, Atalanta versus Empoli and Fiorentina-Juventus. Juventus had nothing to play for. Fiorentina wins that game. Atalanta, again, needed a little help, but also lost to Empoli. So we end up this season with Fiorentina on 62 points, Atalanta on 59, Roma on 63, and Lazio on 64. I believe Atalanta could make Europe if Roma win the Conference League, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But Fiorentina in, Atalanta out. What is your reaction to this Europa League, or whatever you want to call it, European chase outside of the top four?
I mean, this was also another area which was tightly contested till the end. I mean, overall, these teams fought to the nail. Obviously, we had seen Atalanta in a Champions League spot over the past few seasons, but due to injuries of some of their crucial starters, along with losing Gosens in the January transfer window and seeing their main striker Zapata out on and off with injury, they just fell to the wayside and just they weren't able to recreate the success they've had. But they still, at times, put on huge performances, which we would expect from them, but just not on the level we've been used to seeing. Then you had Roma, who has, in my opinion, been one of the most improved teams over the recent seasons after seeing you guys struggle a little bit. And then you had Lazio doing their thing. So, I mean, I still hope that if you guys win the trophy, that Atalanta are able to make it into the Conference League. But like I said, this is a fairly new competition, so we don't really know the full aspects of it yet. But it would be nice to see if them possibly get into that picture, because they do deserve a spot, in my opinion, even in some form of European competition. But I mean, just overall, like I said,
What about Fiorentina? Yeah, give me your thoughts on that first.
Oh, and then, sorry, Fiorentina. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Then I'll dismantle everything you just said about Atlanta, but first talk about Fiorentina.
Oh, I was waiting for my last dismantling of the season. Every time, but anywho. Fiorentina, I saved the roses for last. Congratulations on making it into the European picture, because this is a team that has not been doing well over recent years. And they finally silenced the doubters, silenced the president?
Yeah, they didn't silence anybody. They finally been doing what they're supposed to be doing based on their team.
Yeah, exactly. So they just focused on what they needed to do, and they went on this really great run, and hopefully we'll see what they do in the Europa League. But overall, this is a great look for the league, seeing a lot of newcomers. And then obviously the top four is kind of self-explanatory. You expect some of these teams to be in there. But in regards to the Europa and UEFA Conference League, it's nice to see some fresh faces, such as Fiorentina, since I'm still learning, when was the last time Fiorentina was in any European competition? Do you remember?
When Mohamed Salah was lining up on right wing.
So when the heck was that?
So he's been at Liverpool for, 5 years? So 5 years at Liverpool, then the 2 years at Roma. And then he was at Fiorentina the year before. So, 7 years, something like that.
Well, it was probably long before I got into the sport.
They were in the Europa League when you started supporting Inter.
Okay, that makes sense. 7 long years ago, but yeah. So it's been 7 years since they've been in this position. So it's nice to finally see them in there. And so, yeah. But overall, like I said, top to bottom this year was amazeballs. Now dismantle the wigs, because I know you wanted to.
I'm not going to dismantle you, but I'm just going to correct you and I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. So, and again, I'm not going to be cruel. I'm just going to go straight to the point here. So Atlanta, obviously a team, Champions League last 3 years. They got the quality. They've been the highest scoring team. One of the highest scoring teams in the league, those over that stretch. Again, Zapata had scored some of those goals, not all of them. If you look at the goals he did score, that first year he was exploding. He had a great year last year, but he was in and out like with injuries, like he always is. So you can't just simply say, "Oh, because Zapata wasn't there, that's why they fell apart." And Gosens was not being used by Atlanta very much prior to his transfer to Inter. And then you look at all the rest of the players they have. Ruslan Malinowski, his left foot should be considered a nuclear weapon. You look at Luis Muriel, had 25 goals, 10 assists last season. He was available the entire season, didn't get any close to that. You look at Mario Pasalic, one of the best midfielders in the league. You look at what they had in the back with Di Morel, who came in from Juventus, who played very well. They had Juan Musso, who played well in goal. So I'm not saying they're a good team. There's no doubt about that. They sabotaged themselves in the Champions League. They were fortunate because of situations against in the Leverkusen game in the Europa League that fall apart. This is one of the biggest disappointing things of the season, because they were in fourth place. They finished in eighth. They collapsed. And guess what? Their home stadium used to be a torturous place to play. This season it wasn't. Even when everyone was healthy, when Roma played them, Zapata was there, and so was the whole team, and they got dismantled. I just think they lost the magic a little bit, and they just couldn't coexist with everything. It was hugely disappointing. Gasperini had a poor season on all fronts. It's sad that they're not in Europe anymore. But the only thing I'll push back on it is, I just, based on what you just said, I actually don't think they deserve it. To make European football, even if it's the Conference League, you have to play consistent and show what you're capable of doing. So from January onwards, they didn't look like a team that deserves to be in any European competition. So again, respect your opinion as always, but I slightly disagree. Just for kicks, Verona and Torino both finished in the top 10. Pretty remarkable there. Then you have Sassuolo, Udinese, Bologna, Empoli, Sampdoria, Spezia, Salernitana, Cagliari, Genoa, and Venezia. So that is our league table. Nothing else to really get into outside of the obvious. Except I have one more question about Inter, and then we'll move on to the to that part of the season. Without just simply saying, obviously the Bologna game and the circumstances of this game, why do you think you faded down the stretch?
I would say, in general, obviously the Bologna match. Outside of that, there was a couple other matches that we should have won, especially against Genoa, and I think there was maybe one other match.
Sassuolo.
I think Sassuolo, would have been another good one. There was a couple other key matches besides the Bologna one that we could have, should have won, but just inconsistencies. Like, some players looked some of the tactics didn't make sense at times. Along with just overall fatigue, with some of the players, they weren't like playing to the normal speed and finesse that you're usually used to seeing on a consistent basis. So I think just losing a couple key matches that we should have won, kind of saw Milan make up that gap. And then next thing you know, it was like we were 2 points behind them, and it came down to the final match. So, and obviously Milan got their job done. We got our job done, but it was at that point, it was way too late. If we focused on winning those a couple key matches that we should have gotten points from, I think we would have been the title winners.
Okay, just want to bring one more thing up. The great philosopher Ryan Barry posed to us a few weeks ago that Inter not winning this league could be the blessing in disguise. Do you think? Do you agree with that sentiment? Why or why not? And I just want to know what your perspective is as far as going forward for what happened. If that's a good or a bad thing, and how do you think? Obviously, the reaction will be from Inter, and then we'll move on.
First of all, because I got to get the banter out of the way, Ryan, because of that, I hate you right now, and I'm not talking to you for the next 2 weeks. But, I mean, in the end, he's kind of right, because it kind of gives, like, as you said or in the beginning of the episode when we were discussing this, it kind of breaks the stigma of, oh, it's just one team winning it over and over again. It kind of brings that like fresh philosophy into it. So it's like, if we keep it where a different team wins the league, it kind of brings the neutral viewer over to Serie A, where most of the time it's just your normal Italian Serie A or people who have always been into Serie A's viewership. Mm-hmm. So and besides the champions.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, for Inter, is this a blessing disguised for your team going into next season? That's kind of what I'm saying here.
Well, let's see. As a person, an Inter supporter, I think this is not a blessing because we kind of want to get any titles we get our hands on.
What I mean is, based on the fact, I'm not doing a good job explaining this. I apologize. Based on the fact that you lost the league, do you think it's a blessing in disguise in the sense of now there'll be more pressure for Inter to spend money, for them to be more aggressive, for them to then have that sort of, you're not, like at this point, you're not the hunted anymore. Milan are going to be the hunted, which maybe is less pressure. Do you think the fact that changes the perception of interest change because you missed out on the league and the fact that it was so close, do you think that motivates them to spend more money and be aggressive in the market and potentially build a team that won't be distracted this time around? Sorry, that's what I meant. Obviously you want to win the league as much time as possible.
Okay, no worries.
Does that make more sense?
No, that definitely makes sense. Okay. Now, that I can work with. But, yeah, I think with this, it may force them to literally splash a little bit more cash than they usually would. because that way you can build. Obviously, we have certain players that are already out the door. You have Vecino out, Vidal out, Alexis Sanchez out. So it's time to rebuild this team. So obviously, it involves spending some money. So I think they'll be a little bit more aggressive in getting certain deals done and get those across the finish line. Obviously, names that have already been brought up, Dybala, who else? Onana, and a bunch of these other players. So just pushing those deals across the line, they'll be way more aggressive. And if they have to up their bids, so they may go and do that. So I think it'll force them to like rethink everything and hopefully make a push for a rebuild a little bit. And then hopefully with the players that we do get them quickly acclimated to the squad in Inzaghi's tactics. And I know some of these players are used to already playing the 3-5-2, which is famous of Inzaghi and Antonio Conte. So, I mean, just once they get acclimated to the new teammates and get things rolling, I think definitely this may build the squad for next season and hopefully another Scudetto, which would involve our second star.
So you would wait, what do you mean is your second star? It's not every time you win a championship.
I know.
It's when you go, I forgot I get what you're saying. But you mean like a reload, right? Not like a
pretty much just reload. Inter Milan, here's an analogy. Inter Milan is a gun. The players are our bullets. And it's time to reload.
I mean, because a rebuild would be something like Atlanta, for example, who obviously are a great team, but it seems like there needs to be a reactionary to what's going forward. Dortmund's a team that needs to rebuild, you know? So teams that obviously are not, don't have, again, just look at your starting 11. I don't think rebuild is the word, but no, I get what you're saying. We'll talk about this probably on another episode, but I just want to float one name that has just come to my mind. In the 3-5-2, we talked about a wing back that you guys were trying to get last year from Ajax. He's just joined Bayern this season. But do you remember Kostic from Frankfurt?
Are you talking about that Austrian guy?
No, I don't know. He's like from Serbia. Kostic. The guy in the Bundesliga, not last year, but the year before, had a collect. You've been linked with him before. Inter, Lazio, and Roma have all been linked with him in the past. But plays for Frankfurt on the left side.
Okay, now that rings a bell. I think that rings a bell now because I think you wrote a couple articles with him in the past.
Yeah, so we'll move on real quick, but I just want to ask this. So I was watching the Europa League, and one of the guys, the French journalist, I'm so sorry, man, I don't know your name, I forgot. He said that the possibility of him leaving Frankfurt depends on a team that plays that your formation. So he doesn't have a lot of suitors, not because he's not a great player, but he's not a right back. I forgot left. Yeah, so because he needs to be a wing back position in a team like that, considering Perisic, is he going to come back or is he not? Would that be something that you think Inter should explore if the opportunity presents itself?
Absolutely, because that way we have another person who's a wing back, obviously can provide depth in that area depending on if Perisic stays. So even then, it would be a great option if the Perisic does not sign that one-year contract extension, which I'm hearing talks about. I'm not sure how far along
is. I'm also hearing talks with Juventus, so I think at this point it's smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, so in general, I think this would definitely be a great option for them, especially since we do need wing backs. And I have a really – I know this is weird, but I've always wanted to ask this. Are wing backs – harder to find than any other position?
Well, it depends. So obviously there are players with versatility who can play in a wing back position. You obviously know Rick Karsdorp at Roma is a right back by trade, but you can put him in the wing position. He does well. Perisic, you can put in the wing position. Like I said, the Connor Kostic. I could see Trent Alexander-Arnold, my favorite player in the Premier League, plays for Liverpool. He doesn't play a wing back position, but he's someone that could play in that position. And I think Theo Hernandez could play a wing back position. So it just depends on the personnel. Some there. I wouldn't say it's the most difficult to find, but if you're going to play with wing backs, there's a lot of right backs or left backs that can play that position. But if you're looking at someone who can only play a wing back position at a high level, then it's more difficult to find. Then the list of players becomes shorter. Do you get what I'm saying? So
yeah, that makes sense.
There's a lot of there are right backs and left backs that can play in that position. There's probably some other, you know, but for that very specific position, I think it's difficult. That's why options players that play that position, they're only limited about options based on sort of the formations that are being played by those teams. But then there's a few left backs and right backs who could play that position if they were asked. I know it's easier said than done, but we see the kid at Roma, the Polish kid that just slid in at the wing back position. Spinazzola is another example of that. But anyway, yeah. So basically, I wouldn't say it's the most difficult to find, but it's not an easy thing to find for a team going forward. You know what I'm saying?
That makes sense.
All right, the moment that we've been waiting for, Serie A awards. I'm just going to go through each category. You know the deal. So manager of the season. Let's introduce our nominees. Ivan Juric took over relegation threatened Torino last year. A team with a very average players across the board takes them from 17th to 10th. Another candidate. Vincenzo Italiano comes into a Fiorentina team that hasn't really sniffed Europe, that has underwhelmed their talent. He comes in, handles all the noise from the outside, loses Vladovic midway in the season, finishes in the top eight and qualifies for the Conference League. And then the man, the myth, the legend, Stefan Pioli wins the title of AC Milan. An incredible season, knocking off Inter in the process, a league champion now for Milan. So you go first and I'll go next and explain your decision. So who is your manager of the season?
Manager, what was the name of the Fiorentina manager?
Vincenzo Italiano.
Well, my award goes to Vincenzo Italiano. God help me with these botched names, but... The reason is he took this team that was always near like the relegation zone or threatened to be relegated or was struggling in the bottom of the table to finally getting them where they needed to be. And now they're in the European competitions again, which hasn't been seen since 7 years ago. So that's a good stretch of not being in that position. So to get them back up to this level is huge.
Fair choice. I picked Ivan Juric as manager of the season the last 2 years. I'm not doing it a third time. Again, all respect to him and incredible job he's done with a Torino team that is dog shit. Let's be real. The Torino team that he has in front of him are atrocious. They should not be even sniffing the top 10. Stefano Pioli's done a tremendous job at AC Milan, winning that league, and I'm so happy for him and all the work he has done to get to this point. Nothing but love. But I'm going to go with my – I don't know if you remember this. Who was my preseason prediction for Cup Manager of the Season? And Vincenzo Italiano, and that's not the reason I'm picking him, but to me, if Vladovic stays in this team and they make the Conference League, I'm probably edging Juric. But because he lost in midseason, they stayed on pace. They got big results in really important spots. I think that he's done a tremendous job there and gotten them into Europe. And I think, As good as Juric has been, I think that just edges it a little bit because of his ability to adapt, get players in when Vladovic left and was able to keep them on course. They didn't collapse. They didn't go the opposite way. They just kept the pressure up and got to the top. All right. Young player of the year. I have added a name to the list as well. First nominee is Nikola Zalewski. Comes in second half of the season for Roma, fills in for Spinazzola, and does a tremendous job of filling that spot. I expect a big game from him tomorrow in the Conference League final. Aaron Hickey, great. Bologna underwhelmed this season, but he was one of the constant figures of that team. Then we have Sandro Tonali, one of the best midfielders in the league, really kind of stepped up to another level this season. Then we have Victor Osimhen. Again, wasn't healthy the whole season, but being the main man up top for Napoli. And finally, the another crucial piece to AC Milan, Rafael Leao. And I'm going to throw in Raspadori in there as well. Who are you going with?
I'm going with Sandro Tonali. Sandro Tonali was a signing in the beginning that, in for me at least, obviously I can't speak for you, but for me, he originally underwhelmed, in my opinion, for AC Milan. But over the past few months and even the past like year and a half, he slowly stepped it up and obviously was the one of the main reasons why they had such success in their Scudetto win. If it wasn't, obviously you had Olivier Giroud scoring like crazy, but if it wasn't for some of the facilitation and defensive like capabilities of Sandro Tonali, I think this could have definitely went a different direction. But so overall, just the way he's improved and helped provide Milan with those crucial like moments, he just wins the young player of the season.
For me, this is a lot closer than you might think because of the season Rafael Leao had. I mean, it's really, he's been incredible. I think we see the progression he's made from this year, last season as well. But not again, I'm going to have to agree with you. I think Sandro Tonali has been the guy here. He probably scored the goal that won them the title. You want to get down to the schematics of it. Who knows what would happen if this didn't happen, but scoring that goal in that game, I think it's specifically against in the Lazio game, I think that handed them the title. And there were other crucial goals along the way, but that was so important. He went from people used to compare him to Pirlo, and I used to just laugh at it because when he joined Milan, there was nothing special about him. He looked average. He just looked like some wannabe Pirlo because of the haircut, and this season he turned it on. He got to another level and really has been spectacular. All right. Goalkeeper of the year, Rui Patricio of Roma, Mike Maignan of AC Milan, and Andrea Consigli of Sassuolo.
And the winner of the not goalkeeper of the season is Radu. What? come on, I gotta let them out, you know. I gotta let them.
He's gonna come up later, trust me.
Ooh, there's actually possibly a category for him. I don't know yet. We'll see. But anyway, obviously for me this was an odd no-brainer. Rui Patricio for Roma. I mean, come on. Ever since Alisson left, you've been with goalkeepers that were decent but very inconsistent in performance. Then you get Rui Patricio. If it wasn't for him, Roma could have been in a worse situation right now. He's just really stepped up and been the goalkeeper that you guys have needed ever since Alisson left. So, for me, Rui Patricio gets the award.
Yeah, again, we need to stop agreeing. Everything, I mean, I got love for Maignan. He's done a great job for AC Milan. Consigli's a consistent goalkeeper. He's been here for a long time. But this shouldn't be even close at all. And the reason I say that is, again, I love my back line. I love Karsdorp. I love Banez. I love Mancini. I love Smalling, Kambula. We have a good defense. There's no doubt about that. But when you look at what Mike Maignan had in front of him, as far as the talent or names wise, it's just bigger. You have Tomori there, especially him being one of the best defenders in the league. I think it's it's great, and I know Conceal is great, and I know they've had their moments this season. But for Rui Patricio performing the way he did, especially first half of the season when we weren't defending well, for him to end the season as one of the top in clean sheets and coming up in big moments, he made one mistake the whole season. You look at the rest of the top goalkeepers in this league, even the ones at the top tier have made more than one mistake this season. He made one mistake this season against Inter Milan, and that's the only mistake he made all season. And I think this one was kind of a no-brainer. All right, midfielder of the year, Hakan Çalhanoğlu of Inter, Serge Milinkovic-Savic of Lazio, Nicola Barella of Inter, Mario Pasalic of Atlanta, Lorenzo Pellegrini of Roma, and Antonio Barak of Hellas Verona. Who was your selection?
Okay, it came down to two of my Inter boys. But for this award, I have to give it to Hakan Çalhanoğlu. He, in the beginning, it was unsure of, after coming to us from AC Milan, like, would he be good enough? And lo and behold, he ended up helping us in crucial moments throughout the season. If it wasn't for some of his goals and assists this season, Inter would have probably struggled, but they would still be in the title race. So, and I mean, he has been a crucial part to this team ever since joining, whether it's just helping a little bit in the defense area, or whether it's creating goals, or even just facilitating some of those chances to, like, Martinez or whoever they swap on the front line. So, with that being said, Çalhanoğlu gets my midfielder of the year.
So mine was between the two Rome ones, my Roma boy and my not Roma boy. I thought if you want to look at statistically speaking, Savage has been the best midfielder in the league this season as far as what he's produced in his output, as far as goals and assists. But as – and again, great, great player. But if you look at sort of the impact of a team and how – they were. He's got a Mobley up top scoring so many goals, and getting to play with a striker like that probably goes into his favor. And again, I think you put Savage in any team and he thrives. But this one, and again, I don't usually go for my own team, but I think Lorenzo Pellegrini has to do it. The communication he has created with Tammy Abraham when for much of the season they haven't spoken the same language with each other, the communication, and when Roma have needed a goal in a vital moment, he has come up and delivered. You want to look at the game against Cagliari away from home. Roma played horrible. He scores that free kick to win the game. You look at the performance he had in the derby. You look at the way he's come up, and obviously in the Conference League, they got Roma helped Roma get to that place. Get to the Conference Final. I think his impact, even outside of Serie A, has been great, but inside, great. I mean, his numbers are sick as well, just not as good as Savage, but I think in total impact, I think Lorenzo Pellegrini is the guy. Striker of the year, Lautaro Martinez, Ciro Immobile, Dusan Vlahovic, or Tammy Abraham?
I'm going Tammy Abraham. Obviously, he came into this team from Arsenal where he wasn't really...
Chelsea,
sorry. Kill me later. But ever since, obviously, he was really good at Chelsea, but just when he came to this Roma team, he's taken it to the next level. And what is it, like 27 goals this season?
Yeah, he's had the highest goal total of any debut striker in Roma history. And the other two players in that list are Vincenzo Montella and Gabriel Batistuta. So two legends.
So, yeah, I mean, just what he's accomplished as debuting for Roma is astronomical. So, I mean... In general, it was not for me. I mean, as much as I love my boy Martinez, but I had
misses too many big chances. What? Like if we're being Sorry, I said, if we're being honest, Martinez is amazing, but he's missed too many big chances this season. At least exactly. Anyway, I love Tammy Abraham. He's had an incredible season. He's done so well for this Roma team. Martinez has been great for Inter, but misses a few more chances. Vladovic has been. If you're talking about a striker visually that makes you enjoy that position the most, it's probably Vladovic, considering what he can do physically, as well as what he does with. He's just incredible. And I hate to do this. I really would rather not do this. But I have to go to the blue side of Roma, unfortunately, and I'm going to have to go Ciro Immobile. He's got the most strike. He's the highest scoring player in the league. He won the Golden Boot. He ranks first in nearly every category, other than assists, goals, big chances created, He's just been a monster for them. And if you think of what this Lazio team would be, if you just grabbed another striker and throw him on Lazio, I think Roma would have finished 10 points clear of them if they did not have such a superstar up top. And Immobile has just been – I mean, the numbers don't lie. People give him a hard time because he doesn't perform for Italy. But for Lazio, he performs, you know, as good as any. I know Ryan really likes him even though he wears the blue. But I think this one was tough. All these guys have deserved it. But I think collectively over the season, it's got to be Ciro Immobile. And I wish it wasn't the case. I wish he didn't play as good or be this good. But you know, sometimes you have to just put the bias aside and show up and just give him his flowers. All right, defender of the year. The bulldozer, Bremen from Torino. Tomori from AC Milan. Milan Skriniar from Inter. And Matthias De Ligt from Juventus.
Hang on, give me a minute.
And just so you know, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was gonna say, just so you know, I think just personally, I think it's between three. I put two of these guys on here just because they've been good enough to be nominated, but I don't think they're good enough to win. So I think there's only three candidates in this category that genuinely deserve it. But go on.
In this case, I'm going with Matthias De Ligt. Obviously, with Juventus at the beginning of the season struggled, but once everything started clicking and the defense got back into their full swing, De Ligt has always been on the forefront of their defense and has always been performed at a consistent level. So, and he continues to show why he's one of the best defenders in the league. And so with that, he gets my roses.
Just so the people know, my two here just joined the nominees were De Ligt and Milan Skriniar. This is really between Bremen and Tomori. And this was really tough for me because I know how impactful Tomori is and what he's done this season. And I know that Bremen is coached by Juric, who just seems to get the best out of everyone. But all things considered, not just because of the nickname, but because he's been so consistent for a really average team and has been crucial in helping them get points, I think it's got to be Bremen. Obviously, he's on the move this summer, probably to Inter. And again, it's hard to go against someone who's got the nickname the Bulldozer. And I think he's been incredible. Again, nothing against De Ligt and Skriniar, and I just don't think their standards nearly match Tomori or Bremen. But I'm going to go Bremen in this case, just by inches. All right. Most valuable player. And by the way, this is not player of the season, just to be clear. Sandro Tonali of AC Milan, Gianluca Scamacca of Sassuolo, Tammy Abraham of Roma, Musa Baro of Bologna, and my man from Atalanta, Mario Pasalic.
I'm going to go with Musa Baro because obviously he continues to be a huge role within, what was it, Verona?
Bologna.
Okay, my brain keeps getting players mixed up, but so I mean, with him on the team, he just continues to show why he needs to stay on that team. Because I mean, I don't know. I think there's a couple other players that would still keep them where they're at, but if you take, in my opinion, if you take Juan Musso out, I think they kind of struggle a little bit. So, I mean, he just continues to help Bologna execute on the level they have been. And I think depending on if they get a couple of crucial signings in the transfer window and they're able to keep him, I think they could be moving up the table next season, but we'll see what happens.
I've been waiting for that for the last 3 years. No, that's good. That's a good shout. I'm going to go with Mario Pasalic, though. I think about this in this way. Zabata goes down. Muriel just not hitting the form of last season. If Mario Pasalic doesn't step up the way he does, I don't think Atalanta probably finish in the top. I think, I don't know, I would say top 10, but I think they would finish further down the table. And I don't think they would have entertained a race for Europe the second half of the season if it wasn't for his involvement and the way he stepped up in big moments. Again, the goals, especially goals late in the season, the one against Salernitana, getting a point there was huge for them as well as it was for Salernitana and all that. And I just think he stepped up and has been incredible. All right. The one you all been waiting for. Worst takes of the season. The nominees are Cristiano Ronaldo will flop at United. The resolve of this, Ronaldo scored 24 goals and would not have finished in Europe without him. AC Milan will have a 1% chance to win the league. Obviously, that is what I said. 6-7 games to go. They still won the league. let's see. Villarreal will only win against Bayern on a neutral site. Juventus won't make the Champions League. No English team will make the final. And hold on. Let me just try to think of one more real quick. I had one earlier. I just forgot what it was.
Sounds like a personal problem.
No, we'll just keep it there. Which one do you think is the worst? Actually, no, rank them. Rank them.
Oh, that's better. Come on. Hang on. Okay.
I'm in here
now. AC Milan have a 1% chance of winning the league.
Is that the top or bottom?
I'm starting from fourth to first.
Okay.
Then Juventus don't make the Champions League. Now I have to figure out which two I'm putting.
So you have Ronaldo will flop. No English team will make the final. And Villarreal won't win against Bayern unless it's on neutral site.
Oh, wait. The third is no European team will win the final. So that was all three of yours because it was yours. Then I got to do one and two. Hang on, give me a second to think about my two. Cristiano will flop, and just because Villarreal won't win at Bayern, because unless it's in like neutral ground or something, yeah, we're going with that.
All right, I'm gonna go worse to downwards just because I'll get confused. Again, I've been critical of Cristiano Ronaldo, but that one was bad. You know how I know it's bad? Because when we recorded that podcast, my direct reply was that one might come back to bite you. that was like word for word my response. That one's the worst. Again, you'll be surprised. The Villarreal one is the funniest one. But I think my no English teams will make the. I think I said semifinal actually, or whatever I said. No English teams will make the final was ridiculous. Liverpool and City were on two separate sides of the bracket. It was just delusional to think that not one of them would get through, and one of them did, and almost two did. So that was idiotic. So that'd be my number two. My number three will be Villarreal will only win on a neutral site. My number four will be AC Milan. Actually, no. Juventus. No, AC Milan. No, Juventus won't make the Champions League, and AC Milan have a 1% chance of winning. All right.
Yeah, of course, mine makes the top one.
I mean, you can't mess with facts. So I'm just kidding. No, they were all equally bad. The Ronaldo one just looks the worst because of the
so bad.
It's because of the goals he scored this season in the Champions League and the Premier League. That's why it looks the worst. It's because of the reaction to that. You know what I mean? Where the rest, I can understand we were thinking, at least to a certain extent. All right. Most improved player of the season, Alfred Duncan of Fiorentina, Andrea Piemonte of Empoli, Jeremy Lin, a.k.a. Gio Simeone of Verona, Dusan Vlahovic of Fiorentina / Juventus, and Gianluca Scamacca of Sassuolo.
I'm going with Piemonte. Obviously, he's been out on loan from Inter for pretty much forever. But I
three mean, of the last 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
The year he didn't, the year he wasn't a on loan, he won the title with you guys, so he got real fortunate.
Yeah, but I mean, in general, he has really improved, and I think is one of the reasons why Empoli also had some of their success this season. So, I mean, he's really flourished in that squad. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen to him. Who knows? He may go out on another loan with them.
Wait, what do you think you should do with him? Do you think you should give him a chance in the first team, considering you already have Dzeko and Martinez, or do you think you should just sell him now? Because I don't know. I think it just doesn't make sense to loan him year after year after year. So would you keep him and make him as a first team player next season, or do you think you should just sell him off?
For me personally, I would love to see him get a chance to see what he can do with this Inter team. But if that's going to the loan deals aren't going to continue to take place, I think we should just offload him off the books and sell him outright to a team that could utilize him more. So personally, I would love to keep him, but realistically, it may look like another loan option. So I would just say sell him at this point.
I'd sell him to Empoli. It seems like as long as he's there, he's going to keep them in the league. He may not win what he won at Inter, but as far as who you sell him to, again, all due respect, because I think he's a fantastic player. I don't think Roma, Napoli, Lazio, Milan, or any of those top teams will take him. Maybe Alonso would take him, but I think that's probably the ceiling of what he is, at least in terms of market value. So I think you just and let him, you know, live. At least have some sense of security of where he's playing his football. The mistake was taking him back from Genoa. Maybe if he was at Genoa this season, they would survive, and we wouldn't have to be sad about them not being it. But anyway, I think you should sell him. I would say it's Giovanni Simeone. Again, respect to everyone, but he went from like 9 goals to I think 19 goals. I mean, that's a huge gap in between things, and I think it's. Yeah, I think it's undeniable. Again, I fully expect him to go back to scoring 10 goals a season next season. But I think – and I give him a hard time with the Jeremy Lin thing. But I think you have to just recognize the fact that his improvement this season was off the chain. All right, biggest disappointment. Andrea Belotti, Lorenzo Insigne, Bologna – or Gasperini / Atlanta. DeVry is in there too, but I don't think he's a real candidate here. I just put him in there for kicks and giggles.
Wow. Why you gotta do DeVry, man? That wasn't even funny. That just hurt. But it's true, though.
But you have Bastoni, Skriniar, Dumfries, Darmian. I mean, who all performed pretty well this season. So him, has he been a disappointment? Probably. But the reason I don't think he's a real candidate is because I don't think him not having a good season had any impact on how your season went. I think it was for other reasons. That's all I'm saying.
So let's see. We have Bologna, Belotti,
and Simeone, Gasperini. So to set the scene, So to set the scene, I'll just make this easier for you. Belotti, who has a high reputation in the league, scored 8 goals for Torino this season. They mutually finished in the top 10 without him being impactful. Lorenzo Insigne had 1 goal this season that wasn't a penalty. Bologna have the talent of a Fiorentina and finished in 13th. And Atalanta are way too good to be finishing outside of Europe.
Man, this one is really difficult because these are really good options to pick.
Yeah, I know. These are tough.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to go with Andrea Belotti. Normally, he's used to scoring, like, at least 17 goals tops.
He's at least at 12, 13.
Yeah, so to see him score so low is just really mind-boggling and really underperformed this season. So I'm going to give it to him.
All right, I'm going to go with Bologna. Again, I've said this for a long time. They're more talented than Fiorentina. Fiorentina finished in 7th. Bologna finished in 13th, and I think there were 15 points plus separation. That's unacceptable. Again, all love to the manager that they have there and what he's gone through, but it's time to make a football decision. You can't have this team sit in front of you and not at least finish in the top 10. You got to meet at least halfway. Again, we talked about this when Brian was on. If they had Sarri at Lazio, at Bologna, I think they'd be soaring, and they're not soaring under this guy. And you can't say they don't have the players. Arnautovic had his career best year. They have Moussa Baro. They have Domínguez. They have Aaron Hickey. I mean, we could go on and on. They're just so talented to be not even remotely pushing Europe. All right. Best signing of the season. Rui Patricio for $13.5 million. Tammy Abraham for $40 million. Hakan Çalhanoğlu for free. Olivier Giroud for free. Luigi Sepe for low cost. Or Dusan Vladovic. Do you want to put Vladovic in there? Actually, no. Let's just keep it at this. I think these are the best four.
I'm going to go with Tammy Abraham. Tammy Abraham, obviously, really, I already explained pretty much everything earlier. He has really helped Roma get to where they are this season. And he's put up great numbers for a debuting striker in the club. So, I mean, for me, that's another odd no-brainer. It has to go to him.
I'm going to pick someone that wears the same shirt, but I think not Tammy, and this is why it's not Tammy. Yes, Roma paid 40, and yes, he scored 27 goals. If we still have Paul Lopez, Robin Olsen, Antonio Morante, any of these clowns, sorry, in goal, I don't think Roma are even in the conversation for Europe. I mean, they probably would have had a really bad season. His protection has been incredible. You have to look at how little Roma had to spend on him and the return of that. Honestly, this is one of the best goalkeeping seasons we've seen in the league over the last 5-10 years. So I think considering the cost and considering what he was able to do with what this team, I think, tremendous. I think it's close between all of them, but that's what I would go with. All right, game of the season. Roma, Juve 4, Roma 3, Inter versus Juve Coppa Italia, Empoli 4, Salernitana 2, Venezia 4, Bologna 3, AC Milan 2, Inter 1, Roma 2, Empoli 2, and Milan 3, Lazio 2.
Oh my gosh. I think I'm going to go with Venezia Empoli. Obviously, did you ever watch that match?
No, I did. That's the match that kept them alive for one more week. It was recently.
Yeah, so that match, I mean, 7-goal thriller. It's exciting to watch from start to finish. You didn't really know how it was going to end until the very last, like, few minutes, and it was just great from top to bottom, the start to finish. So, I mean, it was very entertaining, so that's the match that gets the roses.
All right. This is the last time I'm talking about this fucking game because it's destroyed my soul internally and outternally. I mean, if you want an advertisement for the fact that Italian football is such an attacking league, even though it destroyed me, it's got to be Roma Juventus. Such a great game. The great free kick from Pellegrini. Tammy Abraham scores in the first 2 minutes of that game. We see Dybala come back with Juve. We see that free kick that kind of separates it, and then Juventus score three times in 7 minutes. As soul crushing as it is, I don't think there's a better advertisement for attacking football in Italy than that one. So I'm going to go there. Most underrated, Di Monaco, Berardi, Musa Baro, Rick Karsdorp, and Denzel Dumfries.
I'm going Denzel Dumfries. I mean, yeah, he's finally started becoming, slowly got into this team. It has, over the past, 2-3 months, even though he's been with us for a while. But when he has, started or has been subbed on, he's kind of been one of the difference makers. If it wasn't for him, Inter, in my opinion, obviously there wouldn't have been really any issue. But, I mean, he's just, started really showing what he's capable of on this team. And in general, like I said, crucial moments, Denzel Dumfries was there.
All right, I'm going to go Berardi. 15 goals, 17 assists. No one's really talking about him. I think as far as defining an underrated player, that's him. All right, we're going to go goal of the season. If you don't remember the goals, I'm going to describe them for you, okay?
Okay, thank you, because my ADHD be like, do I remember that goal or not?
Yeah, I figured that, so I'm just going to do this. I'm going to try to remember them because I wrote them down earlier, so I saw these today. Ivan Pierce, Bologna, remember, outside the box, one touch again, a bullet into the back of the net. It was the Bologna game. It was that first goal before everything went wrong. Pellegrini, Lazio. The free kick we talked about in great detail. Remember, we had a conversation about the top of the boot versus the side of the boot and basically the trajectory of the shot coming from a place where you don't usually – it's not usually a power application. It's more of like a placement application. In the Derby, obviously huge. That kind of killed it for Lazio. Cagliari in the death of the night in Sardinia. Roma just equalized. They needed to get a point. Boom. Another free kick outside the butt, right at the corner, curled into the top corner. Obviously, Cragnow tries to reach nothing but net. Okay. I'm going to butcher his name, but Jerry Ojorton against Venezia gets the little scramble in the box. Comes out, one touch, then turns his body and then hits a missile into the top corner from just inside the box. Let's see. Kondreva hits a missile from about, I would say, 35, 40 yards out against Udinese. The goalkeeper just, all he could do was watch it happen so quickly. right. David Farioni hits it. Off the ball, off the ground, into the air, into the back, and that was a game-winning goal for them against Roma. Scamacca against AC Milan on a counterattack outside the box rips through the top corner, I think they lost the game, but still. All right, Felix Afina from Genoa. Comes off the bench in that game, hits, I think this is the furthest goal. I think he hit it from 35, 45 meters, just launches it into the top corner. They win the game, and that was the second goal of the game. He just took it for the hell of it and scored. And then finally, I'm going to go Simeone against Juventus. The ball to him. He collects it with it drops to his foot. He turns and shoots from the corner of the box, curler on it into the top corner.
What was the second game? Sorry? The second one you mentioned.
Which one?
You read them off. who did the second one that you mentioned?
I'm gonna read the names and so it was Perisic, Pellegrini, Jordan from Bologna, Kondreva, David Faroni, Scamacca, Felix, and Simeone.
The first Pellegrini. Obviously, this was the one that we were talking a great detail with, like, the placement. Obviously, to see the power, and I do believe it was outside the box, too, with that goal.
It was well outside the box.
I mean, to see the power that he had from the side of the foot in that from that distance is crazy. Because obviously, normally that's, as you just said, that's more of a placement shot to pass it to another player. But
What I mean by placement is when you hit, I'll explain it quickly. When you hit it from the side of the foot, your goal is to try to place the ball exactly where you want it. Where if you hit the top of the foot, typically from long distances, what you're trying to do is put all the power that you have in your legs onto that foot. So it's more of like a whistle. You can hear the power of the boot when it connects. Where his goal there was placement from well outside the distance of where you should be hitting it with that part of your foot. If that makes sense.
Okay, that makes sense. But still, I mean, just using the side of the foot with that power is absolutely insane. I mean, that has to be, for me, the goal of the season, just with how it was executed.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the guy from Bologna, because when he retrieved the ball, he goes into the box, and then he turns, and he has to hit it so perfectly, because if he hits it a little off, it's going way out. And I think for him to be able to curl it into the back of the net, it was just magical. All right, we're going to do best individual performance of the season, most defining moment of the season, and then we're going to do player of the season for last. So best individual performance of the season, Olivier Giroud against Inter, Seeley against Inter, Lautaro Martinez against Empoli, Fabian Ruiz against Lazio, Provel against Roma, Lorenzo Pellegrini against Lazio, and Ciro Immobile against Spezia.
Oh, I'm gonna get sick.
Actually, let me clarify. The Immobile performance I'm talking about is when he missed a penalty and then scored a corner. I forgot who was out. He scored on the next play. I forgot what team it was against. I think they wore black, but I'm not sure. But the rest is the rest.
Oh, best individual performance is Olivier Giroud versus Inter. I mean, he performed at a really good quality level during that derby. So, I mean, just what he did to us leaves scars in my mind. He just executed with precision, knew where he was in front of the goal, knew where he needed to be to get the assist, to follow it up, putting it in the back of the net. Just overall, he was phenomenal.
Unfortunately, I'm going to pick a different performance that probably destroys your soul. I mean, Concilia against Inter has got to be just one of the best performances of the season, because not only the circumstances, you don't lose that game. Maybe you go on to win the league. We know how things happen, but we don't know that would have happened. But the amount of pressure that was put on him, he was saving everything. He had, I think, three saves off the line. He was just individually just on another level. He morphed into Gigi Buffon just for that game and just did what he did against Inter Milan, and truly incredible. All right, most defining moment of the season, and this is a fill in the blank. So you pick whatever, because I didn't know which you know things you would think was the most defining or not the most defining of the season. You can include poor things that were bad, things that were good, but it's up to you.
Defining moment of the season, Radu Fajal. I mean. But yeah, let's see. Let's be real.
Wait. Before you say it, can I say something?
Go for it.
If Radu doesn't make a mistake, it's still a draw, isn't it? Right?
No, it wasn't.
Because they won 2-1. So that means it would have been a tie if he doesn't do that, correct?
I think so.
Which means if you won the game, if you won the games that you won and AC Milan won the games that you won, AC Milan would have still won the league. I'm just throwing that out there. Because you would have been 1 point behind instead of two or whatever.
I'm still thinking about, like, what was a real – I'm trying to think of a realistic one right now, but give me a minute.
But I'm just saying that it wasn't like the end, because if everything else goes to plan, I still don't think he won the league. There's two AC Milan ones. You just said one. That could be one. Do you want multiple choice? Because I can give you it. I just didn't know what you were going to say.
No. I think defining moment was the Salernitana turning things around. In what was it? 13 matches ago. I can't believe who were they.
I don't remember. It was after the Roma game. They started playing well.
But yeah, I'm going to use the match that Salernitana, where they finally got the breath of life and were able to go on that great run and survive. Whoever they faced, that was the defining moment of the season for me.
So the loss to Roma was your defining moment for them. Is that what you're saying?
No, one where they started winning.
No, but what I'm saying is the loss to Roma is what egged it on. That you can say that if you want, because that was the moment they switched and they started playing. Or you can say the win against Fiorentina. But all I'm telling you is the moment that things started turning around was at that defeat. Because after that game, they didn't lose until the last game of the season.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay, you can say that or the Fiorentina game, but the Fiorentina game I don't think would have happened if it wasn't for the circumstance of the Roma game. This one's real simple for me. You could argue Rafael Leao's goal against Fiorentina when they played badly could have been a big moment. Olivier Giroud scoring twice against Inter is a big moment, because if Radu doesn't do that, Milan still would have won the league because – of the head-to-head advantage that they would have held over you. But I'm going to go to Lazio against AC Milan. Sandro Tonali, in the 93rd minute of the game, sticks his foot out. It bounces off of his – or hits his, I think. He kind of pokes it at the end. He beats Pepe Reina, goes into the back of the net. Milan go to the top of the league that day, and they never look back. So I think that moment, a 90th minute winner against Lazio, is my most defining moment of the season. All right. The moment we've all been waiting for. That's the candidates for the player of the season. And I want you to really explain it as well. No, I'm not going to say number one. Rafael Leao of AC Milan, Paulo Dybala of Juventus, Tammy Abraham of Roma, Lautaro the Bull Martinez of Inter, and Ciro Immobile of Lazio.
Oh God, give me a minute.
Wait, you're still on the fence?
Just kidding. Psych. Obviously, for me, player of the season year goes to Tammy Abraham. I mean, I've kind of already discussed this over and over again with my awards for him earlier. To me, there's really not much left to be said, with the exception that coming into this team, he really...
Okay, hold on. Daniel, explain yourself, but this time I want you to explain your case for him, but like why it wasn't the others. Because this was as hard as it got for player of the season, but think about why he deserves it over Immobile, Martinez. You don't have to like give examples for each, but make a case for it, not just why he deserves it, because they all deserve it, but why he deserves it over the lot is what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying?
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. For me, with coming into this Roma team, obviously an English speaking team, he didn't understand any Italian. So to be able to understand like that chemistry with Roma and understanding where to be for Pellegrini to assist him or other Roma players to assist him, is huge, because when you come into a country where you don't know the language, it's kind of hard to communicate. But understanding, learning to adapt to like the body language and the movements of the Italian football shows a lot about how adaptable he is, regardless of where he plays. So whereas all these other players, like, yeah, I get they all deserve some of the award, but we can't do that. But to me, they've been with their in Italian speaking teams before, or they've learned Italian through other methods. Whereas this guy came into it without understanding a bit. So to be able to like break the language barrier and like get used to the whole entire new system just proves that he deserves it a little bit more, because it takes a lot of time and effort to like learn that sort of system, along with trying to break the language barrier at the same time.
All right, totally respect that. I'm not using this for your argument. I'm going to use it to explain why I think my guy's going to win it, because I'm going to get heat by everyone for my pick. If there was a player that had 27 goals and they finished in third place, do you think blank player, would there be much debate that they deserve to win an award like this?
I don't think so.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm not trying to use you to build my argument, but I'm just making a very very specific point. All right. I hate this. And I think, who do you think I'm going to say?
What were the names again? Tammy, Martinez.
No, but Immobile, Martinez, Abraham, Dybala, Liao. When I messaged you to say I knew who I was going to pick, who do you think I was going to pick? I'm just curious.
Immobile?
You're right. I thought you were going to pick Martinez, but I was wrong. So this is why Immobile has been the best player in this league, because if you look at what he's done, again, I can throw the stats at you, but again, he's number one in everything. When you look at the impact he has made in that team, the multiple winning goals, the way he's got his team into those moments. Again, he has had one bad game this season against Roma. They all had a bad game against Roma that night. But if you look at all things considered, if there was a player with 27 goals on a second or third place team, nobody would be talking. So if Immobile played, if Lazio finished second or third, I think it'd be almost undoubtedly the choice. So considering that, we shouldn't base everything we do on just the merits of where they where someone finished or how well. Because what I see when a lot of Serie A seasons, the team that wins the league gets the awards. All the players get awarded for it. So the goalkeeper, the player of the season, this that, like all of them were kind of given to AC Milan. The coach of the year, AC Milan. The striker, the young player of the year, AC Milan. The MVP, AC Milan. You get what I'm saying? And that I feel like that's inherently wrong, based on the fact that that's not how we evaluate things. We have to evaluate things and who the best player was. When you look at the total impact Immobile made on that Lazio team, without him in that team, or you put in any of these other strikers in this team, and that includes the ones on this list, I really don't think they're finishing, in Europe. They're probably finishing out of Europe. They're not finishing ahead of Roma. There's so many different things. And then I can throw the numbers at you. 27 goals, the most big chances in the league, the most chances in the league, number one in every category. And, there was a year where he had like 15 penalties. This year he's had like five. So if you took away the goals scored by all the top guys and took away the penalties, he'd still be significantly the highest scorer in the league, along with Vladovic as well. And so for that reason, I think all things considered, the amount of game-winning goals, the amount of impact he's having, and the way he has sort of been on the top of his gear the whole season. And I know people are going to say, oh, he doesn't perform for the national team, but I don't care if he doesn't perform for the national team. Number one, it's not my national team. Number two, it has nothing to do with the Serie A season. And, I'm not even counting the way he performed in all competitions, but I think Immobile, for me, is the choice. It was a difficult one. It's as difficult as it gets. I thought about, I don't know how many. I think at one point I had 15 candidates, and I trimmed it down to 8, then 6, then 4, then 2, and then I studied everything I could. And so for me, Yeah, I take no pleasure. I think Immobile thoroughly deserves the player of the year. All right. Let's see. Did I miss anything here? All right. I guess that's it. It's been a great season. We'll be back soon. Oh, hold on, real quick. Tomorrow is the Conference League final. How does it end up going? I'm not going to predict, but I want to. How do you think it ends up tomorrow?
How do I think it ends up tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Let me think. I think Feyenoord win. I'm sorry, but I mean, they're a really good team. And I mean, I would hope I'm wrong and it comes to Serie A, but we'll see.
Wait, sorry, what?
Who are you
picking?
Feyenoord.
All right, you got to give legitimate reasoning. Explain.
I mean, Feyenoord has what league do they play in again? Remind me. Dutch. Obviously, Feyenoord are, I think, the direct rivals of Ajax, and it's usually a really good contested league over there too. So, I mean, just how well this team is built from top to bottom is huge. Like I said, I don't know much about this team, so that's why it's kind of hard for me to actually make a case for this. So,
do you want to just forget I asked the question? If you don't really know the landmark of it, then we can just cut that if you want. It's up to you.
Yeah, we'll just cut it because I don't.
Yeah, sorry. No, I get you. You just don't know.
Hold on. All right. All I'm gonna say is, I've been waiting for this day since I was 16. We got the special one in with Roma. I feel confident going into this game, and I hope we win it. And if we do, I'm going to dump a apple flavored sparkling, whatever you want to call it, over my head. If not, I'm just going to drink it in sadness. So let's go Roma. Let's go Abraham. Let's go Pellegrino. For the league and it would mean that we've had a better season than Lazio. So I'm capable of, but Forza Roma and onwards. We will be returning. I don't know what day we'll, but what to do our team of the season. But thank you for listening and see you later.